the TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink.
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. We've got 2 hours of action-packed live news and analysis. We'll hope you learned something this afternoon. Certainly, we're going to lay it on pretty heavy. There's some big stories that are percolating right now, and we're going to try to tackle those in due course. And yeah, we're going to probably connect, if we can, our roving correspondent for culture and sport in the first hour to get some essential play-by-play on some of the biggest headlines in the world right now. And also in the second hour, we're going to return to your pocketbook, money. Everybody's worried about the banking crisis. What's happening with gold, silver, Bitcoin? Should you get in? Should you not get in? Is it too late to get in? We'll get Blake Lovewell on the line in hour number two and just hear what he has to say about all this. And he'll share his thoughts with us on what he thinks is a prudent course of action during this financial crisis. And all the banks as well, they're talking about insuring all the bank deposits in the United States. And would you believe it? And this is interesting. I'll definitely have to talk to Blake about this in hour number two. But the U.S. is now doing a study, a government-sponsored study, to see the feasibility. I know this is going to sound crazy, but here it goes. To see the feasibility of how the U.S. government could possibly guarantee all $18 trillion of bank deposits in the United States of America. Wow. $18 trillion. This is not good. This is not good. I personally think this is the beginning of the end. And I always wondered how the collapse would happen. We're talking about the big one. And this is how it happens. It happens when government moves in to secure the interests of the bankers and not the people. You know, you might think that securing $18 trillion of U.S. deposits is the right thing to do and protecting the little guy and all the rest. That's not the little guy. To protect the little guy, which is 90% of deposits in U.S. banks, small amounts, they've already got enough money in the kitty for that pretty much, okay? It's manageable, and there's not going to be 100% run on the banks. You probably, I mean, just it's ridiculous to secure $18 trillion. You'd probably at most need to be prepared for, you know, if it was just Armageddon, it would be 50% run on the banks. 50%. I know people that won't take their money out of the bank even if the sky is literally falling. They just won't. Okay, especially people who are retirees and so forth. There's no point. What are they going to do with it? Eat it? They're going to eat the cash? No, it's just not going to happen. Okay, so, you know, the worst case scenario, you know, 50% of the deposits up to a certain amount in the United States. You're talking about chump change in comparison, okay? I'm not talking about the big guys. They don't need to be guaranteed. They're smart. They can move their money around. They pay accountants to do that for them, offshore, onshore. Property, they sink it into wherever, it doesn't matter. They got money in all gold, everything. It's completely diversified portfolios. They can afford it. Unfortunately, most people don't have that ability. 90% of the depositors don't have any such ability. So maybe they're the ones that need to be backstopped, not 100% of the account. So again, all the heavy lifting is for the 1%. There you go. Any questions, class? Any further questions? That's how you read right through the headlines and do it quick because you don't have time. We don't have time. So we'll get Blake to cover that. Hopefully we'll talk about that in the second hour. But here's the big one. Big story, big news. There's two big stories. If you listen to the top of the hour news headlines, two big consequential stories right now in politics globally. France is on fire. Macron's declared himself the monarch. He's king. King Emmanuel I. Let them eat baguettes. let them eat paninis. That's Emmanuel the First is the new sovereign. He's declared himself king. So yesterday was the vote of censure. We'll get Freddie Ponton tomorrow on the show to give us an update on this. It's absolutely all hell's breaking loose in Paris. If you've seen the footage of it, it was fairly calm last night. The police didn't kill anybody, but it just beat up a few people, you know, the usual. The regime thugs just roughed up some activists, beat up a few women. It's usually what the French police are very, very good at. But it's building now. Now you're going to see the people rising up in France. Why? There was an opportunity for a vote of censure in the French Parliament, and they did not get the votes in the first round, and there was a complete denial of a second motion. Okay, that would have probably cost the prime minister, that forced her to resign, and with that, Emmanuel Macron's government becomes a zombie government. Now, if Emmanuel Macron was honorable, he would have just stepped down. So there's clearly no confidence in the government, but they're mired in technicalities to try to avoid seeing the whole thing collapse. So what happened? The establishment closed ranks in their own interest and ignored the interests of the people. Obviously, people aren't happy in France. They want to extend the retirement age, make people work 43 years to draw a state pension. And that's on top of all the other austerity cuts and all the sort of the war against freedom and liberty waged by the government against the people over the last 3 years. You know, so there's been no reciprocity on the COVID authoritarianism in France, and no heads rolled. And this is what you get. Let this be a lesson to everybody in the world. If you allow a semi-democratic government to do a full transition into authoritarianism, become a fascist regime, if you allow that, at that point, you cannot then ask them to leave power, okay? Because that's not what the duck does. After it begins quacking and walking like a duck, it then is a duck. A fascist is as fascist does. And they do not leave power. This is the irony. And a lot of people still are deluded, thinking they live in a democracy when they actually don't. Unfortunately, yeah, the train's left the station on the fascist express. It's left. So it's too late. Now you can see how they really behave. So this ups the ante. The people, what then? People come out in the street. Then what? Massive demands. Then what? Police get drafted in from around the country to the hot centers, be it Paris, Lyon, maybe Marseille, a few other principalities. In truth, there'll probably be up to a few hundred cities that will be rioting this week. And you know what the French government did? I have confirmation on this. So petrol deliveries did not make it to petrol stations in the last 48 hours. Isn't that interesting? And around the country, most petrol stations were either empty or had very limited supplies. Why is that? That's to keep people from getting in their cars, filling up, and making their way to the cities to protest. Do you see how that works? Yep, that happened. Well, we'll talk more about that with Freddie tomorrow. So that's one big story. Why is that consequential? Because France is the second most powerful country in Europe next to Germany. And if France goes belly up and haywire, then Brussels is very much on the back foot on pretty much everything, because that one can spin out of control pretty quick. And then it becomes an anti-NATO thing, and then it becomes a Frexit thing, and then you got a big problem on your hands. So the French have had it. The government is just corrupt. They're running on a globalist agenda. Everybody knows it. The cat's out of the bag. French people, they've got the number of the government now. It's just a question of time to see what happens. So visceral reaction by the state, impose law and order on the people, crush protests. And you'll see the extreme violence again on the streets of Paris this week, because fascist is what fascist does. So that's the big story in Europe, one of the big stories. And in the United States, similar political potential unrest over initially the arrest of Donald Trump. Now, this U.S. district attorney, I think it's Alvin Bragg, Melvin Bragg, the Soros-funded DA in New York, was pressured to prosecute a case, a 10-year-old case against Donald Trump over misfiling paperwork on an NDA, a hush money payoff, via his lawyers to Stormy Daniels, former porn star. So again, Trump had an affair, and to keep her from going to the tabloids and all the rest of it, he had to pay her off. I think it was probably a couple hundred grand, signed an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, and somehow this got filed via Trump's crooked attorney, Michael Cohen, who himself did time recently for, I guess, perjury or lying or something like that. Anyway, the DA twisted his arm, probably offered him something, maybe a reduced sentence, to come in and try to revitalize this old dead case against Trump, a process crime. And so this is what they're doing in New York. So the NYPD, so part of the theater is to, you know, say, oh, that we're mobilizing the police for protests. We're expecting a wave of MAGA, January 6th style Trump supporters to converge on New York and raise hell outside the courtroom, etc. Is any of that going to happen? Don't know. Trump's got a lot of supporters in New York, that's for sure. But a lot of this is theater. New York is New York. It's not the Capitol. And the true story of the Capitol will never be honestly told by the mainstream media, because the mainstream media are dominated by complete hacks and shameless partisans, as well as the punditry. I mean, I listened to a large Twitter Spaces debate last night, and it went late, so I managed to hang on for about 4 hours of it. And, you know, the Democrat surrogates are just so dishonest and intellectually dishonest and, you know, just very toxic. And their argument style is very ad hominem. And so you can't have an adult debate over any of this stuff. And unfortunately, you know, I'm going to say this is not a partisan statement. It's a statement of fact. The Democrat and the liberal, neoliberal establishment in America have weaponized the justice system. They've weaponized it. They've weaponized the FBI, the DOJ, the media, Silicon Valley. They're meddling and attempting to rig elections. They're arresting people. They're arresting people who didn't commit felonies and giving them felony sentences, like on the January 6th farrago. All the while, nobody's talking about or trying to do anything to put an end to the FBI unleashing their agent provocateurs and informants leading the protests, okay? And then the media, the J6 committee, sitting on all the footage. Unbelievable. Anyway, so corrupt. It's so corrupt, folks. So anyway, that's what's happening. Is Trump going to get arrested? We don't know. We don't know. It's never happened before. No sitting president or ex-president has ever been indicted for especially something this stupid. But anyway, welcome to America. Let's take a break here with TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back after these messages.
You should hear what David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan are talking about.
I assume that if they couldn't say for sure that there was going to be a weapons of mass destruction attack, you always have to err on the side of caution. But when I found out many years later that there was never any real threat and the dossier was sexed up, as they called it, in order to make a case for the war, that really shook me to my core. That's one of the reasons I became a whistleblower, to say I'm all for the military, I'm all for the government, but the idea that our own people are actually doctoring evidence, it goes against everything that we stand for as a nation, everything that we are meant to be doing as military officers, and it is so wrong. If we do that, we become the bad guys of the world. If we lose our values, if we trample on human rights, we put people in jail, there's nothing left to defend.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital
that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, today's News Talk, and we are smashing through the walls of deception here on this live broadcast, giving you the news, giving you the analysis, giving you the full dose of truth. We're going to try to bring our roving correspondent for culture and sport, who's intrepid at the moment. He's floating. He's in a state of free-floating anxiety out in the world, Basil Valentine. We'll try to bring him now in the live link. Hello, Basil.
Well, yeah, we try to avoid anxiety, Patrick, at all costs. You know,
exactly. I'm with you, Bet.
Stay calm, you know, stay focused. Unfortunately, we've lost, haven't we, one of our cohorts, a kindred spirit, a real warrior in Northern Ireland's Greg Sharkey, who sadly passed away in France over the weekend, it seems. Greg, of course, was famous for organising various conferences and events in Northern Ireland, in his home city of Derry, including Imperialism on Trial, where I think you spoke, Patrick. And he was a one-man powerhouse, is the way to describe him, you know, endlessly fighting for justice and common sense. And he will be sorely missed, particularly in his native Ireland.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I didn't feel I knew how to bring that up in the opening segment of the program, but yeah, Gregory Sharkey, you know, Imperialism on Trial was a live event that he started back in 2018, right around there, 2018 or something, and I spoke at maybe four or five of those. That it's kind of an event series that went on tour, Derry, Belfast, London. And yeah, I did quite a few. I met some great people. I met, you know, Ray McGovern, Ambassador Peter Ford, Christian Harfison, editor of WikiLeaks, you know, George Galloway, et cetera, you know, lots of, you know, and Craig Murray as well. How can I forget? And just too many names to mention. Chris Williamson, former MP, Labour MP. I mean, Greg is just, it's very sad that he's passed away. We just found out over the weekend. Very sad. He was really great at bringing people together. And
yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was yeah, brilliant to bring people together.
Yeah, he was. He was fearless too. I mean, he would say he was going to do something, and I was just like, Greg, he'd call me, and I'd be like, that's impossible, Greg. You can't possibly do that. So, but he didn't care. He just go for it, you know, even if the whole, all the odds were stacked against it, and he had no plan, it didn't matter. You know, he was kind of like, he had that kind of Live Aid spirit, you know, it's sort of Majuri and Geldof sort of, you just make a few phone calls and then slap it together, you know. It's like, and he came out successful most of the time, and he did a great thing. And yeah, Greg was definitely a one-man force of nature, that's for sure. And I think, and on the lockdown and the COVID issue, he did some live events while they're enforcing vaccine passports in Northern Ireland. I spoke at a couple of those. It was last year. It was a year ago. It was in January 2022. And, you know, it was very tense at that time. It was very tense. People were not happy. Like the thing was ready to boil over. And he invited us to, along with the organizers of another organization in Belfast, to speak on their stage right in front of Belfast City Hall. And I came for that event and spoke there to, you know, this is the biggest crowd I ever spoke to. I mean, it was quite daunting, actually. But the warm reception from everybody there, and, you know, Greg was working hard to help, you know, other groups too. He was definitely a team player. You know, there's always rivalry between activist groups, and he tried to support some of the other groups as well. For the Julian Assange issue, he dedicated Imperialism on Trial like five straight events every 6 months or something. It was Free Julian Assange, and he donated money to the, as far as I heard, the Assange defense, the DEA, I think it's called. The extradition, stopping the extradition, don't extradite Assange. I think that's the name of the campaign. But yeah, so he was, you know, very generous and also very, very honest, very humble, very deferential, you know, didn't like to boast about his achievements, very understated, you know, your typical stoic, you know, Northern Irishman or Irishman. So I say Irishman because he was definitely a unionist. He's a United Ireland proponent. 100%.
That's not unionist, Patrick. That's a Republican.
A Republican. I'm sorry. You're right. Sorry, I'm talking too much, Basil. I'm getting confused. Yeah. United Ireland. No, it's definitely, that was Greg.
Yes, but interestingly, one of the last posts he made on Facebook was to say that he felt that Sinn Féin, the leading Republican party in Northern Ireland, who now have control of the Northern Ireland Assembly, was no longer the party of the hunger strikers of Bobby Sands. In other words, that they have deserted their original cause, which was interesting. Sinn Féin, of course, was always described in the UK press as the political wing of the IRA. Mm-hmm. But it would be wrong to characterize Greg as purely an Irish Republican or in any way to associate him with, even indirectly, with cause of violence.
No, not at all. Not at all. But the thing is, if you go now to Derry or you go to Northern Ireland, there is a big United Ireland movement. It's a nascent movement. There's a lot of young people, and that's what they want. And they're very, you know, open and matter of fact about it. It's not the same as it was 40 years ago. And no. So there's a kind of a natural congealing of the North and the South in a certain way. Obviously, there's people that are more pro, you know, UK and British and identify that way. But I think Derry is a special place because it's right on the border and you don't know what country you're in. It's like there's no border in Derry. It's like, Derry is like the capital of the United Ireland, basically. He was definitely all for unity and bringing the North South together, just bringing people together. But if what's interesting you said about Sinn Féin, Basil, is that there is a wide recognition now in the North, and I've heard this in the South and the Republic as well, that Sinn Féin has just gone ultra woke. You know, they used to be anti-EU back in the day, and now they're South anyway. They
were very, very left-wing.
Very anti-imperialist, anti-EU,
that's right.
And now
anti-war.
They're
very anti-war. I mean, their own war, of course, you know, but yeah.
They flipped. They completely flipped. Anti-NATO. It's a woke kind of real kind of WEF, you know, World Economic Forum technocrat style party now.
Yes, they've craved respectability for decades, mm-hmm. and to be sort of incorporated in the main body politic, both of the Irish Republic and of Northern Ireland, and they've succeeded now. I mean, gone are the days when it was, you know, firebrand Gerry Adams and the late Martin McLaughlin, you know, who seemed to be on our television screens every night, including, of course, for that bizarre period when Margaret Thatcher banned people from hearing them actually speak. People may have forgotten that. You used to get clips of Gerry Adams on the 9 o'clock news in Britain, and his voice would be dubbed by an actor. It was truly bizarre. That, of course,
I remember that. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it was bizarre. It was bizarre.
Digressed. Yes, I mean, we don't actually know the exact circumstances of poor Greg's death yet, but it seems like he suffered a heart attack or something.
Yeah, we don't have the details. They're forthcoming, and we might. I'm sure that if people are interested, they just keep an eye on Greg Sharkey's Facebook page. And a lot of people are posting things, and there'll be information there, more information, and maybe his Twitter account, which is at Gregory Sharkey 68. So born in 1968. And it was, Greg, wow,
shock
amazing.
To everybody in the independent media in the UK, there's no doubt about it.
Definitely. Yep. He definitely wasn't, he wasn't a kind of a groupthink, crypto, kind of, the Stop the War Code.
No, he was no identity activist, was he?
Not really. He had he has very strong beliefs ideologically, but he wasn't tethering his reins to the Stop the War Coalition or any of these sort of establishment opposition, organizations. Yeah. So, he came out very strong, and, and I was happy to be a part of the effort to defend Julian Assange. And Greg understood pretty early that this was a big thing, and he completely reoriented his Imperial Zelman trial events to basically free Julian Assange, and kept that up for 2 years, about 2 years. And
Yes, and that is, well, let's pick up from that point, because the Assange situation is sort of increasingly bizarre, really. His lawyers, Julian himself, have now been waiting 5 months for the so-called Supreme Court of the United Kingdom, what used to be the Law Lords, the highest legal recourse in Britain, waiting for them to decide whether or not they will hear his final appeal case. They've had all the legal documents for months, yet can't decide whether they're even going to hear the case. Now, very various procedural irregularities perpetrated by the US that should really mean the case is simply thrown out, that they don't need to hear it, because Julian has been spied upon, has had his documents stolen, and the idea that he's had a free or fair trial is total nonsense. And there are, as I say, numerous breaches of legal protocol, which should really mean that it's just tossed out. But that, I'm afraid, isn't the case. I did see both John Shipton, Julian's father, and his brother on Tucker the other night, because the film Ithaca, which I saw in my home city of Brighton, met John briefly afterwards, is doing a tour of the United States. They've got about 50 plus screenings, and it's in the United States. Arguably, United States, United Kingdom, and Australia are the three single most important countries in terms of rallying support for Julian, who's now been in solitary confinement in Belmarsh Prison, which is no joke, for about 4 years. Housed alongside murderers and terrorists of one sort or another. So Tucker said that he had been unaware of the details of the case, but now that he was aware of them, he supported Assange. And the tide of public opinion has definitely taken a significant step in Assange's direction over the last few years as a result of the absolutely tireless campaign by his wife, Stella, by his family, by the supporters, including the late Vivian Westwood and all sorts of people. So, you know, let's say the pressure is building on the US to drop the charges. Theoretically, that pressure should make no difference to the UK Supreme Court, who are deciding simply deciding a legal matter. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, it's going to be increasingly difficult for them to extradite him, put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are waiting for, you know, how long can the British authorities keep him on ice? Because that's basically what they're doing. They're keeping him on ice until the U.S. can finalize this extradition proceedings. But this is becoming a real political liability for the Democrats. It is a little bit of a problem for them because, you know, because if Trump pounces on that and says he's going to pardon him, then they've lost the argument on that. It really just eats away at the credibility of the liberal Democrat, you know, ethos that they just completely shunned Julian Assange. I mean, it's like the thing that nobody wants to talk about, you know.
Very much so.
The unpopular topic at the holidays among around the dinner table. Nobody wants to discuss it. And then the bullshit, you know, uncle comes in and basically exposes the whole thing. That's Trump. He could really throw egg on everyone's face if he occupied the Assange issue. That would be a disaster, because then they'd have to, because the visceral reaction is to oppose anything Trump supports. The left have to oppose, or the Democrats and the media have to oppose. They can't agree with Trump, so they'd have to attack Assange. And I don't think they're able to do that. You see, you remember Basil back in 2015 that we invented that term, the magic of Trump, that inadvertently Trump could cause chaos simply by commenting on something or taking up an issue. The ripple effects were like, in a way, it sort of corrected the issue. In an indirect way, even if Trump himself didn't intend it to do so. And I called that the magic of Trump.
Yes, I mean, it would be bizarre because who had the opportunity to pardon Assange when he left office, remember, which he didn't take. You know, a lot of people were very disappointed at Trump's sort of final list of people to pardon, which was virtually non-existent. So, you know, and he had, it was with Mike Pompeo under Trump, wasn't it? Or was Mike Pompeo at the CIA at the time that were plotting to murder him? You know, and Pompeo is still obviously, you know, wants to persecute Assange and throw him in ADX Supermax Florence for the rest of his life, along with El Chapo, you know, absolutely sadistic and bizarre in the extreme. Yeah, I mean, what Trump would be doing if he did, or for that matter, any of the Republican candidates, is that they would be outmaneuvering the Democrats, strictly speaking, to the left. They would be positioning themselves to the left of the Democrats on that issue. Maybe Democrats are fine about that. You know, they don't really care about human rights anymore. That much has become increasingly obvious. Witness the persecution of Trump currently making its way through the New York courts. That's where the action is today. Today is the day that he was anticipating being arrested, and there has already been a bomb scare, believe it or not.
Oh, really? Is that correct?
Yes, at the Central Street Courthouse. The court had to be cleared a bomb scare, of course, it's just as easy for that to be a false flag. Anybody can ring up the court and say, hey, you've got a bomb, you know.
Yeah, including an FBI informant.
Yeah,
absolutely. Obviously, anybody. But of course, for the partisans, for the Maxine Waters of this world, for the Chuck Schumers of this world, it feeds into the narrative of MAGA Republicans being domestic terrorists.
100%. Exactly.
Maxine Waters went on air and said that Trump's call for protests at his arrest, he was encouraging domestic terrorists. And she stuck with January 6th on the end. I mean, the woman's completely deranged. Completely out of touch with reality, you know. So it remains to be seen whether these charges, which are, well, shall we say, thin at best, you know, are whether they're actually brought today. There are protests outside. Outside the courthouse, both in favor of Trump and against him, in Manhattan, as District Attorney Alvin Bragg deliberates over the case. Alvin Bragg releasing the violent, prosecuting political enemies, reads one sign. Because of course Bragg has been, he's a Soros funded DA, and he's been releasing violent criminals back on the streets. Apparently, you have to be guilty of murder to get locked up in New York these days. You simply sort of punch somebody out or rape somebody, and you're back on the streets within hours.
Murder, not even murder's not even, it doesn't even raise to the bar of even getting a parking ticket now. The real crime is if you weren't wearing a mask when asked to, you misgendered somebody. Or, you know, you tried to get in without a vaccine credential, or I don't know, or you're wearing a MAGA cap and you're too close to the government door, or the government building. That's a serious crime. That's a serious crime.
Yes, that's right. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, it's all become a little bit ridiculous to say
it
the
has,
least.
It has. Let's take a break real quick. I'm with Basil Valentine, a roving correspondent for culture, sport, and crazy politics in America. Good Lord. Let's take a break real quick here with TNT, today's news talk, and we will be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I am going to keep pounding away at this. This whole idea about oceanic warming due to geothermal influences being the main cause of the change in the climate, not CO2. Here we go. Yet another article is coming out today. Scientists discover intense heat waves lurking at the bottom of the ocean. Now, there is no way that the increase in atmospheric CO2 is causing intense heat waves at the bottom of the ocean. What do you think happens to that water that warms up there when it spreads out through the entire ocean? Then what do you think happens to the amount of water vapor in the air? Water vapor being the number one greenhouse gas and also correlated directly to temperatures, CO2 is not. So what we have here is researchers investigate marine heat waves at the sea surface for over a decade now. They started going off in the mid to late 80s. So finally, someone is starting to look at this. The question is it too late? Because the CO2 horse is out of the barn and running rampant with the general public. People have to step up and look at this stuff. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog, meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
Political commentator and investigative journalist. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Patrick Hennington, your host. You listen to TNT, Today's News Talk. We're discussing the interesting big stories in the U.S., of course, and other things with our roving correspondent for culture and sport, Basil Valentine. Basil, on that front, yeah, very unstable. The media were kind of, they floated out a fake story yesterday that the New York police were mobilizing thousands of riot police, and that we found out from a police officer that wasn't actually true. They didn't ask for any new forces. They already have a kind of emergency contingent, a special emergency group that normally goes out for big events. They brought in the lorries, the usual barriers, the standard stuff. And so there's nothing kind of unusual in terms of how New York dealing with crowds and, you know, protests. Contrast that to the Black Lives Matter summer of 2020, the rioting, where basically it was almost like there was a stand down order with Mayor Bill de Blasio. But I think the new mayor is slightly better, I guess, because he's an ex-cop. So de Blasio's out, Eric Adams, slightly better. So, yeah, but see how the media was pumping that, Basil, because they wanted to create this impression, I think, across the country and the world, actually, that, you know, Trump supporters are lethal, dangerous, and they're insurrectionists and terrorists and all the rest of it.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole, you know, narrative they've been trying to peddle for the last 2 years, that somehow MAGA Republicans are unacceptable. That's Chucky Schumer's message, you know, beyond the pale. If you're, you know, you can be a Mitch McConnell Republican, and so perfectly okay. Do you know what I mean? But not this populist, nationalist, freedom-loving cult that swarms around Donald Trump, who remains the leader. So, I mean, you know, the bottom line of this is that this is, to all intents and purposes, a political persecution. And it means that the U.S. justice system is now weaponized against political opponents by the ruling elite in the same way as authoritarian regimes and banana republics do. You know, what's the first thing you do when you take power in a banana republic is you make sure your opponents are arrested.
Yeah, it's like Brazil. I mean, you could argue that that's what they did to Lula, although, you know, Lula's opponents say he's corrupt. But, you know, they got him on process crimes. So it's very similar. Like, I'm not a big fan of Lula with the whole mandatory vaccine thing he's rolling out right now. I mean, it's absolutely Klaus Schwab on steroids. But to be fair, he seemed to be a victim of lawfare. And it seemed like, you know, there could be a foreign intelligence agency involved. And by the way, you know, the CIA can move in and overthrow somebody like Lula, get him thrown in jail through some crooked Operation Car Wash, I think it was called, where they managed to bang up Dilma Rousseff, the former Brazilian leader, and then bring Lula in there. And he was caught up in that. And then they can turn around, Basil, in 4 years, and they can overthrow the incumbent, Bolsonaro, help fix an election, and then bring in Lula again. So it doesn't matter. They're not loyal to any particular, is what I'm saying, Basil. They're, you know, in these countries. So in the U.S., it's the same thing. These sort of powers, this is what Democrats don't understand, Basil, is they're all cheering. They're just like, yeah, nail Trump. We don't care for what. Just get him. And what they don't understand is if you allow the judiciary and the, you know, the FBI and, the, you know, law enforcement to be so politicized that you're engaged in, you know, banana republic style lawfare, that those powers will be weaponized against the Democratic opposition at some point. And it will. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, the hard iron fist of the right wing version of fascism is inevitable as a natural reaction to the extremities of this left wing neoliberal flavor of fascism.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be so sure. You know, in the United States, obviously, the two things that the Democrats have got on their side, which aren't going to change anytime soon, are 90% of the corporate media. Now, that's a radical change from 20, 25 years ago, when you know, the CBSs and NBCs, of the, or at least ABC and Fox and all the rest of it, were generally Republican, and MSNBC was really the only sort of outrider for the Democrats in the first part of the 21st century. That's all changed around, and you've now got only Fox who support Republicans. So the narrative and the propaganda is all in one direction. And the other thing is, you've got all these Soros-funded DAs up and down the country. You've got the, you know, his insidious influence in basically buying what passes for the justice system, and it's going to take a while to winkle them out. You know, gradually their incompetence and the disintegration of American cities into lawlessness is becoming apparent. And one by one, like Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, these ultra-woke elected, sort of so-called elected officials are getting tossed out. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there will be a tide, but it's going to take a little bit of time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, even in California, you know, you could have a conservative reemergence, awakening, a backlash, as it were, because it's so extreme there. And now they're calling for reparations, and they want to sort of give $3 million, $5 million to every person who can claim lineage to slavery in America. I think San Francisco as a city is promising this. I mean, what a nightmare. So this is what they're up to in California. I mean, they've just lost the plot completely. They went crazy over COVID. I don't think they've recovered. So, you know, that sort of mass formation psychosis from COVID and all that, it's just, the power has really gone to their heads in California. And I think they've lost the plot. And I know these people just, they won't bat an eyelid to kind of plunging the state into total bankruptcy and completely and you know, anarchy if need be. I mean, they don't care. So defund the police, you know, flood the streets with fentanyl and meth and start, you know,
$5 million in reparations for every black person in San Francisco.
Yeah. That's the current. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Even though there was never any slavery in California, of course.
No, you're going to see if they pass to that. I mean, everybody would, any African American with who wants to basically get some cash will move to San Francisco very quickly.
Well, so, yeah, you might buy $5 million. That's it. You can retire on the spot. You know.
Yeah, I know, and it's crazy. And then at the same time, the Soros-funded DA in San Francisco, Chesa Boudin, who's, I believe, the son of the former Communist Party leader. I'm not sure. But, you know, not prosecuting people for felony thefts. So there's gangs of people just going into stores and just looting places in broad daylight. You know, gangs.
Just yesterday, yeah. Fighting in the Target in San Francisco, you know, school kids fighting, sort of what we used to call in England, steaming gangs. You know, where you get large gangs of youths who just go steaming through shops or public transport, robbing people.
Steam. I remember that. Yeah, steaming. That was like, that came first. It was smash and grab, then steaming, and yeah. That's what's. It's not even a conducive environment for any retail activity above, you know, maybe liquor stores with bars and bulletproof glass, you know, sort of thing. So it's kind of a return to the 70s in that sense. The good old days, the bad old days, you know, so it's interesting. It's regressive, but that's it. So
hopefully not. But yes, I do want to pivot to a couple of other important stories before we go at the top of the hour. You may want to carry on with these afterwards, but
sure, go ahead.
Well, of course, the, you know, Ukraine situation with China talks going on at the moment with Putin, and the US are absolutely apoplectic about the idea of the Chinese brokering a peace agreement. My God, they want this war to carry on as long as possible. But the latest today is that the UK is planning to send ammunition that contains depleted uranium for use in Ukraine. Now, 2 points. First of all, I personally consider the use of depleted uranium-tipped shells to be a war crime of one of the worst kinds. You only need to type, you know, depleted uranium birth defects, Fallujah, into Google, and then click images to realize it's a war crime, one for which Bush and Blair should, of course, be arrested. And it is a nuclear material, uranium, of course. So Putin has said that if the UK sends depleted uranium to Ukraine, it will trigger a Russian response.
Well, we covered this at 21st Century Wire in 2022. A lot of the DU munitions that have flooded the space in Ukraine have come from France. So we have very good documentation. And also the U.S. Javelin missiles, we believe, carry depleted uranium munitions. Because the DU, depleted uranium, okay, that's a product, that's like a kind of refinement product at the end of the civilian nuclear and weapons grade cycle. So it's like the recycling of the recycling, basically. And so they found a good use for it. It's so dense and so heavy. There's a dart, a DU dart. So the density and the weight of it is like something orders of magnitude more than any other metal. And so they put a dart in the back of the shell or in the back of the bullet. And then when it hits the target, whatever that is, a tank or, you know, a building or, God forbid, a person, then the impact of the munition, it explodes. It's got the material explosive incendiary material in it. And that dart, the DU dart at the back, it presses forward from the impact. And it's so, the density of the DU is so great that it can literally cut through anything like a hot knife through butter. And then what happens with the explosion, then the material, spreads out and the dust, as you said, Basil, and the half-life on it is something like 500 million years. What a nightmare, honestly.
Total nightmare. I mean, I've only just learned of this. It's only just been announced very recently today. I'm very, very angry about it. It was Lady Goldie. I've no idea who she is. The Minister of State at the UK Ministry of Defence, who has said that Britain will be providing additional ammunition to Ukraine, including armour-piercing rounds which contain depleted uranium. And I'm absolutely apoplectic about this development.
Jesus.
This is what's needed.
This is warfare. So
we've got the Chinese, who, let's remember, have never invaded anybody for thousands of years, well, other than Tibet, okay. but don't spend their time bombing other countries into submission or using nuclear weapons, trying to broker a peace plan. And we've got the British and the Americans saying, no peace. In fact, we want escalation into what is a form of nuclear weapon. I mean, really? Uranium's a nuclear material, you know? It's not a nuclear bomb, it's not a hydrogen bomb, but it's a form of nuclear material, which, as you say, it doesn't just have the desired battlefield effect, but also has absolutely appalling environmental consequences for decades to come. You know, where are the environment protesters? They should be out on the streets immediately outside Number 10. Your depleted uranium is an environmental catastrophe.
Yeah, someone
change, you know.
Tag Greta Thunberg on this one. Maybe she'll get interested. She's got Ukrainian flags on her profile. I don't know if she does or not, but she supports the war, basically. She's a big supporter, hates Russia. Why? Because Russia has oil and gas. So, of course, Greta has to hate them. But, yeah, it is. It's environmental. It leaches into the water. I mean, oh my goodness, it's just, there's a lot of that stuff in Syria as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Putin has been speaking at a news conference after the talks with Xi Jinping, which he described the Russian-China relations as being at their highest point in the whole history of our two countries.
Isn't Russia that interesting?
Tied together. Look,
yeah, we got a break, Basil. We got a break, but thank you very much. That's something for maybe later in the week. So hopefully we'll catch up with you in a couple of days. That'll be definitely a good topic. But thank you very much, Basil Valentine.
Thank you, Patrick.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen, our roving correspondent for culture, sport, and wild and woolly world of politics. Mr. V is gone, but he'll be back. We'll catch up with him later in the week. Look, top of the hour news headlines coming up, and more to come. And also finance, gold, and Bitcoin with Blake Lovewell in the second hour as well.